Bienvenidos. My name is Denise Cantor, she, her, ella, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist.
And my name is Dr. Leslie Celis, she, her, ella, licensed clinical psychologist.
And we are your therapist friends. Yay!
Hi, Denise. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Leslie. Hello, hello.
So, as others might have noticed, we started off this podcast a little bit different today. We are deciding to make a little bit of a tweak in our intros to include our pronouns. And the reason for that, well, we talk a lot about making this podcast inclusive, making it safe for people, and wanting to really create a community that's open and accepting. And so we want to help dismantle toxic binaries that exist in our society. So we're hoping to do our part and really encourage you all to do the same in your daily lives too. Mm-hmm. So I want to preface this conversation with this. We want to name that we are having this conversation from the perspective of two femme presenting women. And we want to acknowledge that our experience as Latinas can and probably have been very different from other folks who might be listening to this podcast or come upon it at whatever time in their life. So I'm speaking about or speaking directly to the folks who may not, I guess, traditionally fit the mold of that label. So I'm talking about our gender non-conforming, non-femme presenting trans Latina women out there and everything, you know, under the spectrum of just different identifiers that maybe I haven't spoken to or didn't mention here. And so we want to acknowledge and take into consideration that this entire conversation that we will be having today comes from a very specific position based on our experiences, and we know that coming into it, and we want to be respectful and mindful of that as well.
And we want to hear your stories. This is the inspiration for the podcast, which is to share stories. And we, as we do in every episode, we'll share what our experience has been of being a Latina, what the messages we were that we received about being a good Latina, and we really want to hear from you. So whether it differs or there are similarities within our stories, please share them with us. We love hearing from you.
Yes. So without further ado, today we wanted to talk about what being a quote good Latina means. Obviously, that is a loaded question, and we're kind of implying something already with putting that good in there. But Yeah, let's start it off. What does being a good Latina mean, Denise?
For me, being a good Latina has two elements to it. There's the way that I was raised and the messages that I received about what it meant to be a, quote, good woman, right? And then on top of that, what it means to be Latina and the fetishizing of being a Latina that comes with that as well. So it's twofold for me. And the reason that we picked this marker of good is because we want to speak to that, and of course we don't believe that there is such a thing as good or bad. It's just what feels true and natural and authentic to you. But we do get a lot of messages growing up about what it means to be a good woman, and on top of that, it means to be a good Latina.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think back on what it was like growing up and some of those messages that I received. And in preparation for this conversation, I can't help but remember when you shared the example of closing your legs when you're sitting. Because I was thinking, I was like, I don't know. I think a lot of the messages that I got was about being very submissive and calm. And part of that is our culture. We have a very hierarchical, patriarchal culture. So your kids are to be seen and not heard, kind of. And especially being a woman, we're socialized to not take up too much space, figuratively and literally. Women are supposed to, if you think about kind of how a woman is supposed to sit, it's a lot of like crossing your legs and making yourself small. Whereas if you think about how men usually sit, they're kind of open, right? It's like the wide open legs and the big open chest, and they're just taking up physically so much space, and they've been socialized that is okay. And we're told that it's not. And I remember being reprimanded a lot about that, about me not closing my legs, especially because I was dressed in dresses a lot as a child. My mom used to put me in skirts and dresses, and that's why I wasn't allowed to open my legs.
Yeah. Well, I think it's so interesting because even when I was wearing pants or shorts or anything, you had to sit a specific way, and especially when there was men around, which I think is a pretty, I mean, I've heard at least that's kind of a common thing where it's like, you gotta be dressed a certain way, covered a certain way, not like if you took a shower, you had to be dressed when you got out of the shower kind of thing, or not wearing if you're wearing a tank top, like after puberty, if you were starting to show some breasts, then you had to wear a bra.
How warped. That is so warped, because we were talking about children. Like at 3 or 4 years old, you shouldn't open your legs in front of a man, because then you're being sexualized as a 5-year-old.
Yes. It makes it kind of sad to think about that.
Yeah. Well, our bodies are policed from the beginning.
Yeah, and we're taught that the world is a dangerous place, because in a lot of ways it can be.
It's your responsibility.
Your responsibility to keep yourself safe, because the world is a dangerous place.
Mm-hmm. And if something happens, it's because you sat with your legs open.
Yeah, or you wore, I mean, we hear this all the time in the media, you know, a lot of victim blaming. If something happens, you know, you wore a short skirt, you were drinking too much, you're being too inviting, too nice. So yeah, it makes me really sad that it is our responsibility to keep ourselves safe. Then also uphold a specific image of purity and submissiveness. And I mean, I'm not sure that that's really like a direct word, but it's just, you keep your head down, keep your mouth shut, you just keep moving forward. And then on top of that, you have a lot of responsibility for your family and taking care of whoever. And, you know, this is very much a conversation about like heteronormativity as well, because a lot of the expectation is that you will grow up, have a family, be married to a man. It's a lot of these messages that you get very, very early on. And I think boys and girls get certain messages. So I've heard, you know, my parents talk about children like, oh, tiene cara de pícaro, like that when they grow up, a lot of women are going to be chasing this kid, or a lot of boys are going to be really interested in this little girl because she's so pretty. And so then you become a commodity, essentially. And it's just really icky.
Your value is tied to how much someone is going to want you.
Yeah.
It's so damaging, these ideas.
I agree that it's really damaging. Because most of us don't have to fit into those categories. And a lot of it is very confusing, especially if you're growing up bicultural, I want to say. I want to speak to that experience because you're being told specific messages at home about how you need to be behaving and acting. But then when you go out into the world, there's other messages about how you should be acting too. So things you hear messages all the time now, like you should be more assertive, you should be this, you should be that, you should be asking and advocating for yourself. That's where the intersections start coming into play, right? Because not only are you a woman, but you are a woman of color. And then you have maybe other women who are not women of color telling you specific message that doesn't really, it's not the same experience. It's different. It's not taking into consideration some of these things that we're being taught elsewhere that don't necessarily align with value systems. And so I feel like then what happens is you have these conflicting experiences internally about what it means to be even just a good woman out in the world, a good, strong woman that has something to say, but not too much because then you're a bitch, or not too much because then you're just pushing up against something, or, oh, you're throwing that card, or whatever, you know, you're just angry, or you're not taken seriously because you're too emotional. So then it becomes this huge internal conflict all the time that I feel like I can speak to, because I've felt that before, where it's like, what the hell am I supposed to do? You know, it's like, in these settings, I'm supposed to be like this. In these other settings, I'm supposed to be like that. Like, what, you know, where do I feel like I align with some of these things, and where do I not? And it takes a lot of time for you to sit down and reflect on that and what actually is going to resonate with you. But it's such a long process because of those very early, early messages that you receive. So it's like almost like deconstructing those things as you get older, because they're so damaging to self-esteem and to motivation, to pursuing dreams, you know, to doing things outside of the boundary. And you just kind of got to unlearn all this stuff. And I'm so grateful for women's liberation movements that have been pretty prevalent here in the United States, I'm sure in other countries as well. But that started very recently, you know, like I think in the 60s. So we're not even that far out in terms of just movements in general, you know, and trying to advocate for equality. So I'm thankful for the things that are happening for us in our circles, but I'm also really pissed that we have to do all this organizing and self-reflection and constant like just fighting up against the man, you know what I mean? it's annoying.
It's exhausting to try to figure out who you are and what kind of person you want to be, and what does it mean to you to be a good Latina, a good person, when you have opposing messages about what that's supposed to be coming from all kinds of places, and sometimes even from the same place. I would like to think of my mom as a very forward-thinking woman. She didn't raise me. I did not receive messages growing up of like, well, when you grow up and you have your own husband, or when you grow up and have your kids, and that's something that I've heard before in this work, is, you know, getting messages from your parents about you need to learn how to cook, how to clean, how to be a good housewife, because you're going to get married and this is your goal, right? Or I've seen in movies and TV this idea that like little girls play with pillowcases and pretend that they're getting married. And when I was in high school, I had a friend who like planned out her wedding. She knew her color. She knew who her bridesmaids were going to be. She knew where she wanted to get married. And we were in high school. That was never my experience. What I used to do was I used to go on Pinterest and collect swatches and pick out couches for my home. Like, that was what I wanted to do when I grew up. That was my goal. Like, when I have my own condo, I was like, I'm going to have a condo and I'm going to live in the city and I'm going to work in the community and I'm going to work a lot and I'm going to have a dog. Like, that was my dream. That's where I was going. And in part, that is in big part, thanks to my mom, who didn't tell me your goal, what you need to aspire to, is to become a mother and a wife, which there's nothing wrong with that. My mom, I'm sure we've had conversations, and thankfully she's not pushing me for grandchildren, but we have had conversations where she's expressed her desire to become a grandmother, and that is something that she sees herself doing and hopes that that's something that I want to do for her, but again, not pushing me for it. So not that I don't want to be a wife, because I'm already on my way to becoming a wife, but I want to be my own version of that and what feels authentic and comfortable for me. So I got that message from my mom. But at the same time, I also did get those messages of close your legs and what are you wearing and how other people are going to, particularly men, how are they going to perceive you with the way that you're acting? And even I used to be a very active kid. I used to have a lot of energy. So I used to play in the monkey bars a lot, which was really fun, actually. My mom used to take me after school to play in the monkey bars at the school. Aww. Like, she would stay like 2 or 3 hours and let me do that, but not when I was wearing a skirt. You know, she wanted to make sure that like I was wearing shorts, and aww, she kind of adapted to me. Oh, my mom. She was like, you're going to have to wear shorts because you're always jumping around and all this stuff. So she was still very supportive. And at the same time, it was hard for her to undo the messages mm-hmm. that she got about what it meant to be a good woman, that she was living that version and in parts also communicating that to me from, you know, so I was getting this from the same space of someone who was very, very supportive about me being my own person. And at the same time, every so often, this message of, but also you need to be XYZ mm-hmm. to be a good woman.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, what the implications are of parents who might be older or who still ascribe to the one person being the breadwinner kind of household, because that's what I grew up in. Mm. I know I've mentioned in other podcasts before, and I'm not saying this to justify, right? Like, I don't want to justify anyone for maintaining or upholding certain systems or ideals. I'm saying this because I want to take into consideration that there are reasons for why things stay the same and why they maybe don't. Mm-hmm. But my parents are a lot older than probably other people my age. My dad is in his 80s. My mom is 15 years younger than he is. And she's not really ever worked. She used to nanny when she first came over here. But she actually stopped working once she started having kids. And that's because my dad told her, hey, I think you should not work. I want you to take care of the kids. I don't want anybody else taking care of our kids. So it came from like a good place, obviously, because it's like about protection. But then also, I think that prevented my mom from really exploring and seeing and being part of other circles and understanding what it means to be a woman in relationship to other things, because she has been with my dad since, mm-hmm. Since her 20s. And that's all she's known. You know, she got married off, came over here and just kind of started living her life here and didn't have any friends and still kind of doesn't. And I've heard this a lot, even just with patients and clients, that, you know, puts a lot of pressure, you know, on mothers to then kind of have the family be their thing, right? So that gets reinforced, where it's like the relationship with kids, mm-hmm. the relationship of like being the housewife becomes like such an integral part of their identity because they don't really have a whole lot outside of that. So in my experience, I did grow up hearing a lot of messages from her about like, when you get older and you have kids, you'll understand why I'm like this with you, or you need to find a man, you know, who isn't lazy, that is has work ethic, because your dad always had work ethic, you know, that kind of thing. And as you're sharing your story, Denise, I started thinking of like, oh my God, like this is why I was in a relationship with a man for such a long time. My first relationship ever that was long term was with a man. And I mean, I've said it a million times on here that I'm queer, and I remember just doing it because, again, it was like a thing, like you, it was an expectation that you were going to be with someone. And in fact, you were going to be with one person for the rest of your life, that kind of message, because that's what my mom did, you know, and that's what my older sister did. And that's what my second oldest sister did. So even if it's not verbally communicated, you know, you got all these things that are showing you, right? As a kid, you learn through, like you said, socialization. So what you see is what you're integrating into your identity, into what the social expectation is. So I was very much, I think, in that mode of trying to find someone that I was going to be with for the rest of my life, and this is what was going to be acceptable and whatever, until finally I came to terms with that that was not what I was interested in, that I was not interested in men. And then that opened up a whole other can of worms of what was being a good woman. Now we're getting into gender things, but that also infiltrated those relationships where the expectation was that if I was with a woman, they couldn't be masculine presenting, because then what's the point of being with them? Yeah. Yes, these are the messages that I received, and I've heard other people say the same, you know, where it's like, if you're going to be dating a more mask-presenting woman, then what's the point? And I didn't only hear that from my mother, but I heard that from my older sister as well. And it was so deeply disappointing, because even being in a non-traditional relationship, they were still trying to project traditional ideals and views on the relationship. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, this person was less of a woman because they dressed a specific way, you know, like, it just, those kinds of things too are also deeply damaging and just very confusing, because it's like, what the hell?
That's what's so dangerous about engaging in this kind of like in the binary, right? Is that we are so used to it that when we see something that isn't that, we try so hard to put it in these boxes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of those questions as well that come up of, well, who's the man and who's the woman in this relationship, right? When there's a, and it's like, nobody, like, we're both women or we're both men, like, you know, or we don't subscribe to either one of those. Like, why does that matter? But our brains are so used to seeing that, that we are trying so hard to, you know, put people back into these boxes so that it makes it easier for us to know how to interact with them. But it can be so much easier when we realize that everyone's a human being, and you can just interact with them based on how they're interacting with you and just respond to that.
Yeah. I hope I get to see that day. I really do.
Someday.
If we go back to us being fetishized as women and having to uphold a specific image, it's so incredibly offensive, like, that you're viewed as like exotic and that you're supposed to see that as being something positive and not be offended by that.
Yeah. Even that word is problematic for me.
Right.
Yes. Like, exotic. Exotic? In LA? Really? I got that a lot. I had a job where not as a therapist, where I was interacting with a lot of people. And I think I look pretty Mexican, but for some reason, people couldn't tell, quote, what I was. And they're like, what are you? And they would guess all kinds of things. But the one that I would get most is exotic, which doesn't make sense to me. But okay. But even that word is just like, I'm not a commodity. I'm not a thing. Exotic is not a culture identity. Sorry. Mm-hmm. It's a dehumanization of who we are. We, again, when we are objectified as women and as Latinas, it just, yeah, it doesn't feel like we're human anymore. We're not allowed to have our own identities and our own experiences because there's this idea of what that's supposed to be. Another thing that comes up for me when we talk about being a good Latina, which hasn't been my personal experience, but I've heard a lot, is that you need to know Spanish. And this is a big one. This is a big one because I know Spanish. So I haven't experienced it, but I have heard it for sure. This surprise of like, oh, you're Mexican, but you don't know Spanish. And I have to admit, that was my experience when I first moved here, when I was growing up and, you know, as a little girl, and I would meet other people who looked like me. And I was like, oh, cool. They speak my language, especially being an immigrant, right? I don't know the language. So I'm coming up to little brown kids and like talking in Spanish.
Oh, so cute.
And they don't know what I'm saying. And I'm like, but you look like me. You don't know what I'm saying. So that was my early on experience. And then then you learn like, oh, okay, I'm in a different country and not everybody speaks Spanish here, even if they do look like me. And I know that that can be a really difficult experience if you do identify as Latinx and don't know Spanish.
Now that we're talking about language, I think that there is also an expectation of how you speak as a woman. Mm. Yeah, you can't be talking like a woman of, quote unquote, a woman of the street.
Oh, no cursing.
Yeah, no cursing. It's a big one. I told my sister to shut up once when I was little. Yeah, never again.
Leslie! Never again.
I definitely never did that again. And, but you can even see how, like, it's just shut up. Like, there's such worse words out there I could have used, but yeah. I will say, though, like, I think I probably have a little bit of leeway because I am the youngest to push some boundaries around societal expectations, I think, in my household. Obviously, I was still exposed to the same messages, but I think that because I am different than my sisters in a lot of ways, I did have, I think, a little bit more leeway as I was getting older and for that to be respected. So things like me dressing a certain way, even now, like I'm identify as femme, but I don't always wear feminine clothing. Sometimes I'll wear more masculine presenting clothing or whatever I want, honestly. Sometimes I'll wear my hair a different way, or sometimes I'll not wear makeup, or sometimes I will. And I just kind of push those boundaries now because, like, who cares? Like, it's my body. It's who I want to be. Mm-hmm. And why, like, I'm making myself miserable trying to make other people happy mm-hmm. with or more comfortable. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And that's where the intersection of mental health is in this conversation. You know, these things, mm-hmm. they can be damaging. These things, they can affect your self-esteem. They can make you feel a lot of different ways and prevent you from doing a lot of things mm-hmm. or being a certain way or saying what's on your mind. And for what? You know, for mm-hmm. other people's comfort. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a big journey to be able to accept and be and embody all of who you are because of the messages that you're getting from everyone around you that it is not okay or that it's wrong or that you're being bad, and you start feeling like there has to be something wrong with you. It must be you because everybody else seems to agree. So if you don't feel this way, it's obviously you who's broken here. It's obviously you who's messed up. And that creates anxiety, depression, low self-esteem for sure. And breaking through that and undoing that and finding people who think like you, because they are out there, it's a journey and it takes work, but it is possible to be in that place. And it's so much lighter in every sense of the word. Your body won't feel as heavy. Things won't feel as heavy. Things won't feel as dark either. It's so rewarding to allow yourself to be who you are fully.
Yeah. I think one of the big things for me is the sense of community wherever you can find that.
Yeah.
Because is it realistic that you are not going to have to adapt in this world? Mm-hmm. No, because of how shit is, you know? But you can still have spaces outside of those that that feel good, that make you feel accepted, that make you feel like you belong, and they're out there.
As I'm talking about the journey to finding yourself, what came up for me was, as I expressed, I've had a very strong, big personality, and I've always kind of done my own thing, and my mom's been really good at kind of just following me and adjusting to that. Part of that for me was that I kind of overcorrected. I've always wanted to this day to be my own person and have my own thing. And for me, being a housewife doesn't feel authentic. Not that there's anything wrong with that for whoever wants to be that, but it's not what I want to do full time. I want to be a wife. And so part of that was, I rebelled and I said, I'm not going to learn how to cook because I'm not going to be that person. Well, the person who suffered was I. Because I was in college in my 20s and I didn't know how to cook. I mean, I would do basic stuff, right? Like back then I did used to eat meat. So I would get chicken or fish and rice. And that's what I would eat. And veggies, right? But very few veggies, if I'm being honest. So I didn't know how to cook, you know, and food wasn't that fun. I would prefer to eat out. So as I was getting older, especially after I became a vegetarian, as a vegetarian, you have to be pretty creative, and cooking can be the best way to get the best nutrients out of everything. Because otherwise, then you're just eating like tofu all the time and meat replacements. I could do a whole episode on becoming a vegetarian. It's so delicious. It's such a whole world of deliciousness. Anyway, I hadn't discovered this world because I refused to cook. So I would just buy out a lot, and it was very expensive. And it was all because I was like, I'm never going to be, you know, somebody's cook in their home. And yeah, it was just hurting me. And as I started to allow myself to just be me and not try to fight or not be someone else that somebody was telling me to be or not to be, I had to really just kind of check with myself on who I want to be, the person, right? For me, not for other people. Because if I know how to cook, it still doesn't mean that I have to marry someone and then be the person who cooks all the time in this house. Like, you know.
That makes me reflect on my story and ways that I feel like I rebelled, where I think me going to college and pursuing higher education was my form of rebelling.
Wow.
Because I didn't want to depend on someone. I didn't want to depend on someone financially, and I wanted to be – so, I mean, obviously, I'm talking about having a two-parent household, a man and a woman. I always told myself I want to be my dad's role. If I could choose in the future who I would be, obviously not all the qualities, but but – I want to be the person that can sustain themselves, that doesn't need to be relying on someone else, because I saw how much my mom struggled with that. It really limited her from doing a lot of things, and I didn't want to be that person. And so part of me going to college was also so that I can help others and, you know, do something that I was really passionate about. But I also wanted to sustain myself and take care of myself. I still kind of toy with the idea of like, what would it be like if I was a breadwinner, or like if I was in that kind of dynamic? I think I would still want it to be equal, obviously. However, it still makes me feel good that I am and getting to the point where I can sustain myself financially, and I don't know, it's meaningful. It feels successful to me, which that's tricky because I don't want that to be sort of like an only marker, but it is one.
In part, this job or this career, this calling, because it also doesn't necessarily have to be a job, right? If you have something that you're passionate about and want to work on, it doesn't have to be a career. But when you have something like that, that adds to your self-confidence and it adds to a relationship in that you're choosing somebody because you genuinely, like we talked about in a previous episode, you're both two whole people and you genuinely want to just be close to that person and add to each other, right? To each other's life, not complete each other's lives, but add to each other's lives. This is part of it. Instead of, well, I'm with you because you're nice, but also like, I can't pay my rent, right? So I kind of have to stay with you. Instead of, I don't need anyone, but I would really, really like to spend my time with you. Mm-hmm. It puts you in that position, which could be really great for your self-esteem and allows you to be more choosy about who you let into your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can really see how some of these messages – They infiltrate behavior.
Absolutely.
They absolutely influence our behavior, whether on a conscious or unconscious level. It blows my mind, you know, how much these things really influence us and can make or break us, you know, in certain ways. And yeah. It's all about like that self-awareness and insight, you know, because I do find that some people find themselves like miserable later on down the line and they have no idea. And then when they start looking and reflecting and looking at their family stories and their own stories, they can see those misalignments, right, in some of these values that were ascribed to them or indoctrinated on top of them that didn't really sit right from the very beginning, but held on to them because they thought they didn't have a choice. I'm coming from a position of privilege where I have the safety enough to say that because I know that there are a lot of people out there that don't have that safety to be able to like push out of that until they have to, right? And I think I'm particularly talking about also like religious stuff and sexuality and things like that, you know. Sometimes it's not safe to be who you are. And that is also, I think, a reason why it can be hard to choose specific paths because of that. There's danger.
There's hope in knowing that you're not alone and that there are resources and it's not completely hopeless.
It's a constant juggling and a constant unfairness. And I don't... I appreciate Denise bringing in some optimism because I think it's important for us not to get lost in the stuckness of it all. But I also want to hold space for the sadness and the frustration of it because we have been seeing things on the TV, on the news about women going missing, Indigenous women getting murdered. You know, you have all this really deeply painful, scary things that are happening out there. And we can't make that go away. Yeah, I'm not trying to like make this, you know, super sad or anything, but I think I'm just trying to be realistic to being able to hold multiple feelings, space for multiple things, because there is hope and there is community and there are spaces where you can feel accepted. And we also know that there are other things that make it hard to get those things, and you might be disillusioned in the fight and in the battle with us all, right, that are trying to push up against expectation. I feel incredibly lucky to be in this space with you, Denise, as two women of color having this conversation. If we were existing in another time period, this wouldn't be possible, and I feel so lucky that we can do that right now.
Yeah, I wonder if we would have even been allowed to be educated, let alone start a podcast.
I know. So many emotions. I'm sure listeners are also going through it with us. I think something that I want to make sure to highlight is that you're never going to make everyone satisfied. You're never going to make every single person that you meet satisfied or meet their expectations of what being a good woman is to them. And so I think it's really important for it to start with you and for you to feel good about who you are, to accept, be accepting of you, especially for your mental health.
Yeah, you have to live it, whatever you choose, whoever you choose to be. And this is part of mindfulness, which we've spoken on in the past, which is to focus on what you can control. You have no power over what other people are going to say or think about you, but you do have a lot of power over how you decide to live your life and who you want to be, whatever that means for you. I think Leslie and I are, it sounds like, career-driven women, and we do have this desire to be independent, and we fought the ideas of a traditional, quote unquote, traditional place of a woman. But that also doesn't mean that that is the right way for everyone. Mm-hmm. Whatever it means for you, that's what's right. At the end of the day, for everything, what matters is, are you going to look back and think, am I proud of that? Am I proud of who I've been and the decisions that I've made? That's what matters. Because when you make decisions for other people, we're very unsure about it. We get very anxious about it. And when we look back, we're like, I'm not sure that I'm proud of that. I don't know about that. So just try to listen as much as you can, to sit with yourself and listen to what feels good to you. That is the right answer. Even if then you're like, I'm not sure that that was the right decision. But you know that when you made that decision, it felt right and it was right to you in that moment. Moving forward, it's about what can you learn from that experience.
Reclaim that intuition, women out there.
Yeah.
That gut feeling is important. Feel a little lighter having this conversation. Like it was like feeling like we were going down some dark paths there that I took us down. But I think ultimately, again, I feel very so thankful that we can hold space for this, that we have that privilege now, that right, you know, to mm-hmm. do these kinds of things. I don't take it for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're trying to do something with that privilege.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so curious to hear reaction stories. We really would love to hear from you. You can comment, rate, you know, on our podcast at My Therapist Friends on Instagram. We really want to have conversations about this offline. We really appreciate the comments that we have been receiving, the stories that you have been sharing already. It feels great. Mm-hmm. All right. So thank you, Denise, for having this conversation with me. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for having this conversation with me too. This was good.
Hay los vidrios.
Hay los vidrios.